This program takes place against a background too familiar to need much going into. The American move into Cambodia, the various protests against that move, especially those by students, the reaction against those protests, the deaths at Jackson State and Kent State, the evidence of new division and distrust among the American people as a whole. All of this has led to increased discussion about where the country may be heading, and in particular about where some young people want to lead it. A related question has to do with our educational institutions and what they should be doing or should not be doing at a time like this. We've brought together five young people to talk about these matters. They are Lita Marks, student president, Hunter College School of General Studies, and a member of the People's Coalition. John Luongo, interim student body president at Lehman College of the City University of New York. Stephen Kelman, a member of this year's graduating class at Harvard, where he is to be commencement orator, author of a book, Push Comes to Shove, which is about student protest, and a member of the Young People's Socialist League. John Schwat, president of student government at the Brooklyn Center campus of Long Island University and vice president of the Queens County Young Republicans. Donald Reeves, chairman of the High School Student Rights Coalition, president of the Citywide General Organization for New York City High Schools. I would like to begin by looking at the events of the last 2 weeks and asking each of you how serious you think they are and where you think they have left the country. Ms. Marks, perhaps you'd begin.
I feel that, like most of the students in school, the events that have taken place in the past 2 weeks are just a preview of the coming attractions. The reason I say this is that decisions are made by few, by very few, and the students and the rest of the people in the United States have very little to say regarding the decisions made. There is a division between the people that do, the people that don't, the people that have, and the people that have not. The division is very great, but the number of people that have and the number of people that have not is even greater. The number of people that have are very few. The number of people that have not are very large. The decision also is made by very few, and the feelings of the majority of people, I feel, are that the decisions made are not ones which they can go along with. There is very much distrust, I think, in the part of the students and the part of the community that I deal with in regards to these decisions. They go to the polls and they vote, and they hope that the people they vote for will carry forth their feelings into the decision-making bodies of the United States. I don't feel that their feelings have been so dealt with, and that the outcome of the past 2 weeks are the decisions of the few, and I think that they are very bad decisions.
Mr. Luongo?
Well, I think the president's decision to move into Cambodia was another in a seeming unending series of disasters that have noted this entire administration. Nixon pledged that when he became president, he was going to bring everyone together. And it seems that all he's done since he's become president is polarize the entire nation. The vice president's statements and the president's actions continue to do that. The escalation of the war in Vietnam seems to spit in the face of what is the majority opinion in the United States, and that is that the war should end. And I think the feeling of exasperation, the feeling of frustration, is particularly great among college students, perhaps because we're the ones that are going to have to fight the war, and we're the ones that are going to have to die and be killed there. And I think the feelings of exasperation, unfortunately, are leading to the violence and to the eruptions that are happening on our campuses. And I think students don't know where to strike. They've tried the political process with the McCarthy campaign, and they've tried other avenues. And right now, the frustration is just leading to pent-up emotions and actions that don't seem to have any direction. And I think the other thing that what's happened over the last 2 weeks has pointed out is the irrelevance of the universities and the educational process. What goes on normally during a college day, a college week, doesn't seem to have anything to do with making an impact upon our society and upon the actions and movements of the society. And I think the direction that at least on the university should be taken is to try to analyze what's happening internally in the colleges and to try to find some way of having a realistic and direct impact upon our society. The students' movement towards a strike, which is almost nationwide, isn't really the answer. It just points out the irrelevance of the universities. I think all the people in the academic communities have to get together and try to find ways of approaching the society's problems and solving them, and then finding the methods and means for doing that.
Mr. Kelman.
Yeah, I think that the polarization of the country is the greatest tragedy of the last few weeks. I'm not sure whether it will continue or whether it will be resolved. And I think that, unfortunately, what happened on the campus in response to Nixon's invasion of Cambodia was to revitalize the extremist groups on campus, which had whose growing irrelevancy and whose growing lack of any sort of proposals for what should happen in American society had pretty much discredited them. And I think the frustration which the students feel, I think it's not so much frustration with the fact that few people make decisions in the United States. I think it's exactly the opposite. I think it's frustration with the ordinary American and with it so many people make decisions rather than that just, I think students would prefer that they could make the decisions themselves. I find the name People's Coalition used at Hunter particularly revealing on this regard. I mean, this isn't a People's Coalition, it's a coalition of some Hunter students. I mean, the people are much more represented by the middle American and probably agree much more with the construction workers who beat up some students. At any rate, I think so the campus is polarized back towards the SDS extremism. At the same time, I think that the middle American, the ordinary man on the street, who is the person whom I believe the student movement should try to convince and talk to, has been polarized into the camp of Nixon and Agnew by their justified reaction against the antics on campus. And I think the unfortunate thing about this is that I see no evidence at all that Nixon and Agnew can meet in a constructive way the problems which are bothering the ordinary citizen, whether they be Vietnam or inflation or unemployment or medical care or the problems of the cities. As long as Nixon and Agnew are around in the White House, those problems which the middle American feels deeply are not going to be solved. So I think as long as the polarization goes on, we're not going to be able to constructively solve a lot of the serious problems which we do face.
Mr. Schwartz?
Especially on my campus, the past couple of weeks, the administration, the faculty, the alumni, and the people that work in the university have gotten together. They've solidified. This is one aspect that has happened. Second thing is that many students are looking towards the political process. I spoke to the valedictorian today of Long Island University, and he's going to take some of the money, or he suggested, to give to a local congressional candidate. For 5 years, I've tried to have college students get involved in politics, but perhaps the events of the past week have sort of like pushed them over the brink. Many students are cutting their hair now, and they're going out into the local congressional districts, assembly districts, and state senatorial districts, and try to influence the system that way. Another thing which has struck me is the irrelevance of the right of the majority. A lot of students have become afraid even to come back to campus once the events of the past strike week took place. Many got their marks and then went home. This is bad because if they really believed in what they expressed on the Kent Four and the Vietnam War, a lot of them should have partaken. On my campus, a lot of them, however, went home. I happen to be in an RTC unit at Pratt. And I know that many of the RTC cadets were afraid when a guerrilla theater crowd of about 100 stormed into our meeting and practically broke it up. This is bad, again, because the polarization on campus is taking place much, much greater than perhaps the hard hats are outside the campus. So basically, on campus, I fear a great division among students themselves, whether on the right or the left.
Mr. Reeves?
Well, you know, just listening to everybody else talk about polarization, I personally believe that the polarization was always there to begin with, and that Nixon's move into Cambodia more or less brought it out to the surface, or even revitalized the degree of polarization. As for the Kent Four, in the high schools, I can tell you that the dialogue that's going on between black and white students is that, okay, we cannot condone the murdering of any student on a college campus, but then again, we also look back at Orange State that black students were shot down there, and there wasn't this mass protest. All throughout this, the history of the United States, black people were lynched and murdered in the streets, and there wasn't all of this mass protest and mass spontaneous revolution. Nixon and his rhetoric with Agnew more or less didn't try to establish any communication with the students in the colleges or even the high schools. It was more of a put-down thing, more of a rhetoric that fed what the public wanted to hear, the general public. They had witnessed all of the demonstrations going on, and they didn't really understand what the students were trying to accomplish, and they didn't understand it because they really weren't educated as to what was going on. They just saw demonstrations happening and happening, and no direction. As for the colleges, they feel that you know, they have little influence on whatever goes on in the total society, and therefore they just keep demonstrating and demonstrating. That's even more evident in the high schools, where all we see is the actions that are going on, and we really have nothing to do within the system that can affect it in any way. Even when we demonstrate, it is not as effective as demonstrations in the college campuses. And at this point, you will find that throughout the city, high schools are just engaging in spontaneous revolution without direction, without leaders, that people are destroying without knowing why. And whereas polarization existed before, it and at certain times it would recede, it just seems to be going on and escalating and escalating. And I know that from my experience within high schools and trying to work within the system, that the administrators who control the City Board of Education thwart every effort that students try to take within the system. And they really only respond to people when they take up violent demonstrations. And I think this is evident by Nixon trying to speak to the students now after four of them were murdered. His first initial statement to the New York Times was that if you demonstrate, in effect, that's what it was, if you demonstrate, then you deserve whatever happens to you. That's what he said. And now you find people trying to establish some dialogue between the youth of America. It takes four deaths to make this happen. People start demonstrating and tearing down the college campuses, and now finally the society is trying to turn around and say, what's going on in the college campuses?
Well, but they treat it almost sort of as a psychiatric phenomenon. It is that they're trying to find out what's going on isn't necessarily a sign that anything is going to get better. In other words, we're spending a lot of time trying to cure cancer. This doesn't mean that cancer is accepted as the greatest thing in American society. In other words, that people are paying attention to students isn't necessarily a good phenomenon unless they're going to react to it in a positive way.
May I just say here that I think what President Nixon said was that if you begin the use of violence, then the tragedy may very well follow. I think somewhat different from what you said, Mr. Reeves, but may I put a question to all of you that arises out of this, and that is, what in your view should universities and colleges and high schools do? What is a legitimate activity?
Well, at this time in the high schools, with all these events that have just happened, with the Kent murders and the demonstrations and the move into Cambodia, the high schools are still proceeding with business as usual.
What should the high schools do, Mr.
I think that they should make an attempt to explain what is involved in the move into Cambodia, explain the history of Vietnam, what is at stake. Is the move by the United States into Southeast Asia really something that's right for the American people? To explain the kind of mentality that would actually murder four innocent students standing by watching a demonstration. I think that these things need to be explained. But you find that within the high schools, the administrators, the teachers, and so forth, are just continuing along the same isolated program, that nothing is really happening outside in society. Everything is happening within the classroom, and that's all you really need to know.
There is no discussion in the high schools of these issues?
There is no discussion. The only discussion that is allowed is when students take over a cafeteria, take over an auditorium, and demand to have workshops. This is the only way you can have it.
You would accept, would you, Mr. Reeves, that some of the explanations that would be put forward might not be the same explanations you would give?
You mean that the administrators would put forward?
Yes, that some of the explanations that might be given in high schools or colleges would not accord with yours necessarily. Would you accept that?
That's true.
Yes, I would like to comment on this. At present, when we have had all the rallies and demonstrations, etc., and the school has been closed down for moratorium periods or mourning periods or whatever periods the president so designates the school to be closed down for, there has been a terrible lack of attendance. For the most part, the apathetic students are going home and either saying that they resent the school being closed or they are happy that the school is being closed and they don't have to go to class. The very few students are now increasing in number and forming a solidarity. At Hunter College, it is called People's Coalition. It does not include only Hunter College students. At Hunter College, we have a different kind of campus. We have Hunter College for the, you know, the general student that goes undergraduate college. We have the graduate student. We have the high school students. And we have formed a coalition of people who want to think, hear, and act on the activities of the day.
Ms. Marks, may I ask you, what significance you attach to the fact that so many students are apathetic?
The significance in apathy is one of the problems that is going on in school. The educators are not teaching the facts. They are feeding the students just as though they were robots, and they are being fed with the untruths. They are not being fed with the truth. They are not being stimulated
to
read
that,
further, to find out the actual facts of why we are in Cambodia, yeah, why we are in Vietnam. Are we there to stop communism, or are we there for our economic advantages?
Mr. Schwad and then Mr. Kelman.
You come into like an Orwellian viewpoint of all this. One thing that worries me is that all students should agree that the Ken 4 was wrong, that the guard had no business with ammunition. All students agree in solidarity for certain causes, i.e. Board of Trustees, tuition, which is, by the way, being completely disregarded in these strike issues. And I guess all students are against war. Nobody likes to fight in Cambodia. Nobody likes to fight anywhere. Nobody likes to die. However, when certain students come into university representing a certain philosophical background and tell, let's say, on my campus there are 8,000 students, okay, I agree with you on your apathy, because about 7,000 just left and they just went home. However, when you have a certain segment, let's say 100, 200, 500 at the most, tell you that a faculty member should teach this way and that he can't deviate, or if you have a conservative faculty member, do you know how he's prosecuted on campus or how he's vilified? I'm just saying that if one segment of a philosophical background takes over a university, that's not a university anymore. University is a battering round of a place where all viewpoints are expressed, where all different philosophies are expressed, and where students can not feel any retribution against expressing their will. However, you and certain other people I've heard in the past week say that that all university, or that your university, should express one opinion, and that sounds wrong.
Mr. Kelman,
I was just going to say, first of all, I would hope, in reference to what you said at the beginning, when you said all students are opposed to war and so forth, I would hope we could extend that to almost all Americans. This isn't just a conflict of generations. I think it would be a mistake to make it that. But you said before, Lita, that for example, one of the truths that you would like to have see are we in Vietnam to stop communism, or are we in Vietnam to for our economic interests? Well, first of all, I think it's probably certainly can't be that simple, oversimplified, but I've done a good deal of studying. I think it is, and I'm sure we would disagree on this. I am absolutely positive we are not in Vietnam to protect our economic interests. But presumably this is the truth which you would like to see taught. And also, oversimplifying the situation, this reminds me very much, my mother was a 1941 graduate of Hunter, and while she was there, was in 1940, the American Student Union, which was the biggest student group, had a poll on campus. And this group was controlled by the Communist Party, and the Communist Party at this time was against World War II because of the Nazi-Soviet pact. And to whip up sort of anti-war sentiment at this time, they had a poll on campus saying, was World War I fought to make the world safe for democracy or for the munitions makers? And they were sort of whipping up the campus in support of this. And my mother she tells me this story. I've heard it maybe 300 times, actually, since I've grown up.
Mr. Reeves, I think Ms. Marks wanted to reply, and then perhaps you'd go after
that. I'll just make it very brief in regards to this. I think a well-rounded student would accept a conservative or a radical teacher, and I think that your expression that I or any of my followings at school would want only one type of teacher with one point of view is one of the ignorant statements that come out from people who are conservative and think that this is the only thing that the radical student wants. The radical student wants stimulation. He wants facts from both point of views, because there is no one point
of view. Tell me, why was I... I got up in one class 3 years ago, in one of my foreign policy classes, and I tried to express a certain viewpoint. And not only was I booed, but I was told to get out of the class. And a faculty member there's only one faculty member on my campus that's basically has a conservative viewpoint. And not only did people take notes in this class, but I'm sure this is happening dozenfold all over the college campuses.
What do you mean, take notes in this class?
Well, you know, like they may go into the class, and if he says something, you know, they jot it down. And there are certain movements, I'm sure.
Well, jot it down for what purpose, Mr. Ford?
To bring it up to department chairman and say, oh, you know, look what he did yesterday, look what he talked about. This is a terrible Orwellian approach to school.
You know, Mr. Reeves?
Before, you know, being a high school student or whatever, I, you know, naturally wouldn't like to get into any discussion that would, you know, lead us talking against each other, but, you know, whether we're conservatives or radicals or whatnot. I think that we all agree that what happened at Kent was wrong. Hopefully that the move into Cambodia was also a thing that was wrong. And I think that we should discuss those issues rather than what your teacher teaches you in opposed to what, you know, your teacher doesn't.
It seems to me, though, Mr. Reeves, that a basic question has been brought up here by the statement that Ms. Marks made, that she would like universities to teach the truth.
Well, now, maybe she wants both sides of the story.
I think maybe what we need here is a definition of truth.
Well, what I would like to see is, especially during this time of crisis, especially during this time, when the president calls off classes, there be large-scale meetings in the auditorium or other places that can have a large amount of students hear many sides of the issue instead of going home, going to the beach, going to the movie, or just having what they call a heck of a good time. It is nonsense during this time of crisis to see them be so unconcerned. Now, I am sorry, but I must point out at this point that everybody is not sorry for the Kent State killings. Everybody is not sorry for the Georgia killings, for the Mississippi killings. I know this. We had a demonstration in school. Right outside the school, there were two exits and entrances that were opened. We were demonstrating for the Kent students at this particular time that I mentioned, and people fought, pushed, shoved, and almost tried to hurt other students just to get into class to learn what their teachers were teaching.
Well, they have a right to do that, and I'd like to tell you something. You know, you've got to understand one thing. I'm sorry that I gave you the impression when I said everybody. I know that everybody's not sorry about what happened. Okay, recently you had 6 people killed in Georgia. Now, when I came in, I was very, Well, I can't really express my feelings, but I was against this altogether. But I'll tell you that the students in my particular high school who came up and started sitting down on the ground saying that they protested the killings and all that, I pushed them and shoved them out of the way also. Okay? Not because I didn't agree with what they were doing, but because, you know, as one student put it, to go around and sitting on your behinds after four people have been murdered, I think that's wrong. I think that's a slap in the face. Now, what my point of view is, you know, in reference to learning the truth, is that in the high schools, again, you know, I'm sorry, since you're all college students, I might as well bring in this point of view.
You're here for that reason.
Right. It's to tell you that that system there, it has more or less, not so much education, but indoctrination, that they teach you everything the way, more or less, they socialize you. You know what I mean? You, what is right, this is right, this is right, this is right, and everything else is wrong. Now, we don't know in the high schools both sides of Vietnam. We'll never find it out from those teachers or administrators or whoever he wants to bring into the school. We'll never find that out. We won't find it out about American history, about not even about the presidents. We'll never learn this. And therefore, we demand the right to have this open session, to bring people in who we want to. And you'll find that even in this situation, principals or administrators will not allow an uncensored speaker into the school. They want to find out what exactly his views are, and if it does not conform with that point of view that he wants in the school, then that person can't come in.
What is accomplished when universities, colleges, or high schools are shut down? What do you think is accomplished by that? Mr. Luongo?
I think absolutely nothing is accomplished when the university shuts down, because at least of what I've seen at Lehman College, we closed the campuses down and supposedly everyone was to get together to understand what was happening in Cambodia and at Kent State. And usually what happened was everybody would get around and each person would speak his rhetoric and his cliches to the other person. And there was no desire to seek truth, no desire to understand what's happening. If we're going to find truth and the universities are going to function the way Lita says, it can't be done in large auditoriums and large rap sessions, and it can't be done when the university suspends its normal business. It has to be done every day, day in and day out in the university, when people challenge what's going on and question these things. And this isn't being done on the universities today. I don't think a strike or shutting down the university accomplishes that, because
if that is not being done at the universities today, Mr. Luongo, what have all the student protests, demonstrations, movements of the last 5, 6, 8 years accomplished? Nothing?
To me, the only thing that they've accomplished positively has been when the efforts of the students have been mobilized in a political direction. I think the only impact that we've had on the war effort in the United States was through the McCarthy campaign. When the students stopped talking about getting out of Vietnam and stopped demonstrating, but started doing something by getting involved in the political process.
Mr. Kelman?
Yeah, I was just going to say I agree with that. That I think when you say what are the demonstrations accomplished, I mean, one thing they've accomplished from the point of view of the campus, and here I only speak for my own school, is that almost making the SDS point of view the only point of view that's heard from the student body. And I think during these strike situations, almost a mass hysteria, at least, again, I'm only speaking for my campus, a mass hysteria takes place where students, for example, at Harvard last week, when we had to vote on our strike demands, I mean, everyone was in favor of some sort of strike over the Cambodia thing. And then demands which SDS had been trying to bring up all year was almost like sort of a shopping list. Rehire this person, do this, and including the ending of so-called counterinsurgency research on campus, which would turn out to be anything SDS didn't like, all get tacked on in this very, very emotional situation. So I think that now these sort of strike situations are having a bad effect on the campus they're almost like some sort of Nuremberg rally type thing, and brings students into a mood of hysteria, all behind sort of one point of view. I think that I agree completely with John that the student movement can only have a positive effect insofar as it works in politics, which I translate into English meaning working to convince ordinary people that your ideas are right.
Does ROTC have any legitimate place on the university, college, high school campuses? Any views on that?
I think that the only reason that it doesn't isn't a political reason. It's simply that ROTC trains people how to be soldiers, at least as I understand it, and trains people how to be officers in the army. And I don't believe that the university should be involved in training personnel for various elements in the society directly. The universities should be institutions where you're trying to come to an understanding of truth, not training technicians. And a soldier, if nothing else, is a technician.
Well, there are many technicians who are taught on university campuses, aren't there not, Mr. Longo? And in all fields, agriculture, law, engineering?
I think the distinction, though, is that...
Pharmacy and dentistry and medicine, the list is endless.
But I don't believe that the ROTC functions in the same way that these other people do. It's not something, to put it simply, it's not something that's an intellectual endeavor.
Well, being an ROTC cadet at Pratt Institute, see, this is the Orwellian approach that we're getting into now, again, the truth atmosphere. What about the ROTC cadets throughout the country, the thousands of people that voluntarily take this program? I take it for no credit, and I don't get any credit at LIU for it. Now, their rights, and the rights on Tuesday afternoon when these guerrilla theater burst into our meeting, and by the way, they were banging on drums and creating such a loud disturbance that the priest who was giving a benediction at our award ceremony couldn't even be heard. I mean, this is the way these people react. The rights of the ROTC cadets here are being denied. You say to them, they have no right to do this. They say, we have a right. See, here's the conflict again. Who says who has a right? If you deny rights to others, then you have no right professing freedom for yourself.
But the question is learning how to become a soldier an intellectual action that
should
be part of the college campus?
No, but if that person wants to be a soldier, that's you just have a more well-rounded... I see, like, in ROTC, you're not taught to kill. In ROTC, you're taught certain ideas about an officer in the army. You don't necessarily have to go into a combat arm. You could be a lawyer. You could be going to dentistry or medicine or going to television in the army. This is the ideological viewpoint which I expressed in the beginning. We're being told one certain point of view, and nobody, the rights of the majority are being denied.
Is there a great silent majority in the universities, colleges, and high schools, Mr. Kelman?
Yes and no. I think about that very often. I think they're certainly on a lot of the big campuses, you know, the big state schools, Ohio State, Wisconsin, where which have schools of 30,000 people, where you maybe have 500 rioters, something like that. There definitely is certainly a silent majority. The problem with, and I think there's a silent majority in other campuses too. The problem with the silent majority is I think many people associate the silent majority with, let's say, conservatism, for example. That's one reason. But during the Harvard strike last year, in 69, this silent majority on campus, they may not have, in fact, one of the anti-strike groups came out with a leaflet, where were 9,000 Harvard students when 6,000 got together and almost voted to shut down the university indefinitely, and said, where are you, 9,000? So this theoretically, it was a minority that came to this meeting, yet the majority of students were staying out of classes during the time, and it wasn't a question of going home, because Harvard is a school where everyone lives on campus. So it seems the silent majority on campus in these confrontation situations tends to go along with what the active people are doing.
Ms. Marks?
There is a silent majority. I don't think they necessarily go along with what the active people are doing. The pathetic thing in colleges and in the United States is that those in power state and let the people believe that the silent majority agree with them. There is a silent majority. I don't really believe they necessarily believe with the leaders of our country in the same trends of thought. There is a silent majority that will not get up and say, no, you can't go to war, I believe in peace. And the reason for this is that sometimes due to lack of education, they are not able to answer their fellow employees, who they work with. They are not able to answer their neighbors why they would feel in the frame of mind against the war. Therefore, they rather not say anything. The other people that believe in the war, heaven help them, will not state it, because usually the very strong activists are against the war. What the crisis lately has brought out on the college campuses and in New York City especially is that the silent majority of conservatives, which is very good, because finally they are coming out and saying something. I'd rather hear somebody say, I'm all for the war, I'm all for Nixon, so if I find this member of society to be my enemy, at least I know who he is. I have found other students at Hunter College who have felt the same way I feel, against the war, and they were also part of the silent majority. But believe it or not, they will not stand for this anymore, and they are joining lately. It's a wonderful movement to see the people come out of the woodwork at my college. It has been the greatest improvement that has ever come in Hunter College. The alumni are calling, writing, begging to join the movement. It is wonderful, they say, that Hunter College finally has become alive. You see, what had happened at Hunter was on March 17th and 18th, we had a citywide rally for the increase of fees. This
citywide rally for the increase?
Regarding the increase of fees. And when a rally occurs at Hunter College, which is in the heart of the city, amongst Fifth Avenue, Park Avenue, wealthy white, upper middle class people, something stirs. It's not usually permitted. They don't know how to handle it. Fortunately, we are not getting heads and skulls crushed, because I don't think we're going to get tear gas necessarily, because that tear gas will go amongst those people who are quite wealthy and would not stand for tear gas coming into their apartments or to their residence. And I really feel that Hunter College has stirred up feeling in students that they are human beings and they have the right to be heard.
Does President. Violence have any legitimate place in the protest movement?
You know, I would like to answer part of that. You see, I have been attending now for 3.5 years and have gone through the channels, the proper channels that you and most of the people would really be in favor of. That is writing, asking, setting up meetings with the administration, with faculty from faculty council. We have gone through these procedures and channels for nearly 3 years. As the president of the Knight student body, we continue to go through these channels until some strange happening occurred at Hunter. And as I said, it woke up the school. There were a group of students that originated the People's Coalition, and they went en masse because they had lack of faith and distrust in channel and procedure methods. They blockaded the elevators. It was the first movement in Hunter College. Unlike a lot of schools, Hunter College does not have an SDS on its campus. We are not in any way similar to the other college movements of violence. We have done everything in protest, such as closing elevators down. This was the beginning move, but this woke up the students. And for some reason, when I got up to speak, I had said, I can only say I give credit to the individuals that took this step and the strong conviction. And the president of the school also stated, after many applause by most of the students in the auditorium, I would say over half, the president got up and said, I agree with Miss Mark's statement that this action has brought this school to its understanding and awareness.
I have to give that up also for the past 2 months, for 3 years, also as a, you know, working in the school system for change and so forth in the high schools. And finally, president of the city council, I also went through all of these channels. They're requesting, you know, to peacefully negotiate, to sit down and talk with the students, to see if we could get something settled across the table rather than out in the streets. The same thing, the same telegrams, the same asking, the same pleading. And after 10 weeks, I'm telling you, not even a response. Nothing, you see. And then, whereas I would not advocate violence myself, you know, I find that when students now finally get tired of all of this rhetoric and say, well, listen, let's take another course of action, and they start tearing down the schools and burning this and people start to get hurt, then these people finally make a response. And I mean, this is evident by the Board of Ed. Just recently I was debating with this man, Walter Degnan, who is the chairman of the supervisory personnel in the Board of Ed. And here is a man who is trying to tell me, you know, use the legitimate channels. And he knew that I had used these channels. And yet he realized that the public did not know this. And he went on saying, well, look at all the violence that's going on, the violence. Therefore, we can't really sit down and talk with you.
Mr. Kelman?
Yeah. A few comments on this very interesting discussion. First of all, I think the first problem that we face is that university communities are not democratic societies in the same way that, in my opinion, the United States is.
The
high school certainly is not.
Right.
And, you know, the same democratic channels are not available. Now, whether this is a good or bad thing, there is an unequal relationship between a student and a professor in more of a way than there should be, you know, in society at large. So that's one of the problems. But second of all, I think that there are when you say, you know, we tried legitimate channels, you know, writing to people and so forth, there are other tactics besides violence that could have been tried to as an alternative. I mean, talk about people having problems. I mean, the United Federation of Teachers has been trying to get a contract for the paraprofessionals for months, and the Board of Education didn't answer them either. And they're a lot more important organization than the GOs in the high schools. And they wrote and sent telegrams. They didn't hear a word from the board either. So bureaucracies are slow, but they're not going around smashing windows. I mean, they're threatening to strike. Now, maybe that would be... the difference is that violence can easily be done by a few people. You know, and if there are only a few people in back of the thing, then you don't necessarily have a right to be heard. You know, if 2% of the student body wants to get certain changes, I mean, you know, going through the channels doesn't guarantee in and of itself that you should automatically get your results.
What do you mean they don't deserve a right to be heard?
No, they don't deserve necessarily a right to have their decisions followed.
Why not?
2% because a majority of students, certainly the minimum should be that a majority of students should want the change.
You see, now, you know, I find this really difficult because now you're really getting contradictory. You're saying that if 2% of people want something, forget them altogether because these people don't want anything.
No. I'm not saying forget anyone. Saying that, you know, I'm making comparison. I think that some students are going to violence as a thing because a few people can. You don't need a majority for a violent action. Now, when I'm comparing this to the teachers in New York and the paraprofessionals. Now, for them, they have gone through the so-called channels and have not gotten any answer from the Board of Education either, just like the students. Now, what they're threatening is not to have a few paraprofessionals throw rocks at windows. They're threatening a strike action, which would, to be successful, would have to involve almost all the paraprofessionals and many of the teachers, too. And this would be a sign, an evidence... that this is support. This has widespread support.
You're talking about a different thing. When you talk about teachers and their unions and so forth, when they go out and strike, you have to realize that there is a question of money involved. You see, that is really the difference between a teacher strike and a student strike. When we're striking, we're asking for relevance and intellectual stimulation, all this kind of stuff. And really, for the students that we call apathetic or whatnot, they could really be happy with what they're getting, you know, even if it is indoctrination, if it's not relevant, if it's not the truth, they could be happy with it, and that's probably why they wouldn't want to go out and strike. Now, you could have the same situation as 2% of the student population that doesn't believe that Nixon's movement to Cambodia was right, that the killings were right, and so forth, and they could also try to close down the schools, regardless of what the other 98% of the school feels. And they deserve to have a right to be heard.
They deserve to have a right to be heard, but...
Do they have a right, then, to close down the school, Mr. Reeves?
No, I don't agree with that. I believe, personally, that if students are happy and content with knowing that they can be shot at a university, even though they're not participating in a demonstration... If they're happy that they can be drafted and sent into a war that's not even declared as a war and killed for no reason at all, I say, fine, let them continue to go to their own classrooms and sit down and do whatever they want to do. But for me personally, if I can close the school down in order to get my message across that I don't condone any of this violence or aggression in Southeast Asia, then I'll do it.
Well, how do you reconcile the two last sentences that you just spoke?
that you think they have a right to go to the school if you want to, but if you can close down the school, you should do so.
What I'm trying to say is if I can more or less get enough people to follow me in closing down the schools by just withdrawing, not stopping anyone from coming in that way.
But I have to agree with him, because that you keep on saying that 2%, 2% want something, or a very small percent want something. In this world, in this history, if you even follow the American history course that you learn here in school, you will know that only very few have ever done anything in excess to try to change and improve the world.
Only a minority
have done something to improve.
It's the same thing with civil rights. I would agree with her totally. It's the same thing in civil rights and in every kind of action. It's always the protest of the minority that brings about the change.
I agree with you that the act of protest, the sense of participating in a demonstration, but it seems to me that, okay, maybe a minority of the blacks, let's say in Birmingham, participated in King's demonstration, or certainly a minority of blacks in the country went to the March on Washington 63, but this was clearly supported by a majority of the black community.
You don't know that.
They're public opinion polls.
Public opinion polls, what I'm trying to tell you that you don't know that, first of all. There's a whole story behind that march in Washington with King and with Kennedy and with black leaders being bought off. That's something that you should look into before you make a statement like that.
Even the demands at Hunter College, we met as not only People's Coalition, we met with all the government organization leaders. There were three from each government. There were people that were called Save Our School, or Majority Coalition, which were a group of people who were against the tactics, but they all wanted the same demands that Hunter College wanted. The students, they all wanted it.
Okay.
Nonetheless,
I want to put a word into it. This is a very bad precedent that's being set here. Two things. Number one, you're purveying to at least the students that you represent in your colleges that there's an act, a feeling of desperation, that nothing can be done except, and then dot, dot, dot. I disagree with that. I have a little more hope in the process. I can speak to my board of trustees very nicely. I can speak to the faculty people. Perhaps that's why I was elected. I don't know.
So can everybody.
Everybody can speak to them very nicely.
What do you mean by that?
Is a certain segment of college students which isn't represented on this panel. And these are the people that are the guerrilla theater type crowd, and these are the ones that break into
the
thing.
You're the only one that's really caught up in this hysteria.
And the second thing I'd like to bring out is the question of... You lost my train of thought.
while you're trying to recover it, Mr. Schwab, let me bring up another question. When President Nixon went to the Pentagon the morning after he announced the move into Cambodia, he said, I don't know the precise words, but he said, in effect, if it were not for the war, the students would simply have another issue. And somewhat the same thing, rather different language, but somewhat the same thing has been said by Dr. Bruno Bettelheim, who has said that when youth turn violent, it's a kind of grown-up temper tantrum by young people who were never chastised or denied anything during their childhood, and they cannot cope with it when they are now denied things. Now,
just to follow that, I think somebody made a statement about democracy in the high schools and about in the schools, and about the lack of it, and about the lack of channels through which people could make an impact on society without using violence. I think that we jumped over that a little bit too easily. If it wasn't Cambodia, it's not that it would be another issue and that we would start on this grown-up temper tantrum. It's that in the school community, what can we really do to make an impact on a thing like Cambodia? The decision was already made. No one was really consulted. People just woke up and found out that there were 6,000, 7,000 people into Cambodia and they wouldn't be pulled out until June, until whatnot. And all the letters and the writing to the senators, this has been done already. And in all honesty, the only visible evidence that these people will listen to us is when the people went right down to Washington and he had to come out and talk to them, and then he had to I'm sure that that press conference that he had must have been a humiliation to him when he had to answer the statements about, well, what do you think about the violence? Has it made any kind of impact on you? Are you going to stop making attacks against the students and verbal attacks against the students? And when he had to say, well, okay, I'll stop doing this, this must have been humiliating to the man.
If somebody would sometime listen to other people, the Nixon and the other gentleman you mentioned, and look into, for instance, the writings by Neil, who ran the school Summerhill in England, you find that these comments that are made by Nixon, etc., tend to lead the world to polarization for one reason. I don't understand how any man can make a statement and let the people believe that students are just sitting there waiting to pick any topic to release a rebellion. Students are not rebellious. Students rebel when a cause comes to rebel against. They are not born rebellious. They are tired of being repressed. They are tired of having all their thoughts and all their feelings never listened to. Right. And I don't mean by never listened to that I cannot talk to the president.
Nicely.
The president's door is always open to me. Faculty council members will always speak to me. I am very highly regarded in my school. And all the people will speak to me. Now, to be spoken to and to see the change occurs is two different things.
Yeah, but now I remembered what I had forgotten. Fine. That the moderate students on campus are talking about violence. And talking the way you were about violence, there seems to be an acquiescence, if not an acceptance, or maybe not enough forceful statements against the use of violence on campus by the moderates. In other words, maybe the moderate should come out and say firebombing is wrong and we can do it this way, you see.
Whether it's right or wrong, the problem is, and I think in American history, it's shown that violence in this country works. I mean, the labor movement wouldn't be where it was today if in the 19th century they didn't blow up factories. The Italians and the Irish wouldn't be where they were except for the acts of violence that they had.
So all of a sudden
people condemn us for the violence. And I think violence is wrong.
We wouldn't be where we are as a country if it wasn't for violence.
Right. The United States is based on violence.
Excuse me a minute. I was going to call on each of you to make a closing statement, but I think I will not. I think we might as well let this continue, Mr. Long.
I think the problem is with our society is that the violence, as I said, that the violence works. And I think that's the problem. It's not a problem whether students are revolting. It's not a problem of what's happening at Kent State. It's a problem that the whole society is based on violence. Now, that has to be attacked. And the issues that are usually dealt with have to be forgotten, and that thing has to be attacked. And I think that's the root cause problem.
Mr. Kelman?
Yeah, I want to respond to that. But first, about the thing, if they weren't Vietnam, would be some other issue. I think that is the case, but that's a good thing. Vietnam isn't the only thing that's wrong with American society. You know, there are other things that need changing, too. So I would hope that students do continue to be involved, but not in the ways that many are doing it. Now, on the question of violence works, I disagree. On the labor movement, I think the labor movement was set back by the violence in the 19th century, and it helped the control of the labor movement by the Gomperites, and the labor movement isn't socialist in America, largely because of some of the labor violence we had in our early history, which gave the leadership of the labor movement over to more conservative elements. I think that the lesson of America is that one of the things most wrong with our society, one of the things, the reason that America isn't working in many ways today is because of all the violence. And I think the sort of, you know, homilies, violence is American as apple pie, violence works without any real proof being adduced in favor of it. I think the black riots in the ghetto, which are frequently given something that proved that violence worked. What are they got a few fire sprinklers opened up so kids could play in them, and we got Nixon in the White
the
House.
War. I mean, the blacks wouldn't have gotten anywhere unless it was a civil war to kill.
A war,
the United States wouldn't be here unless we fought a revolution with Britain.
A war is somewhat different from
violence.
In all of human history, it's been there's been recognized a difference between war and some sort of, domestic insurrection type thing.
Are you suggesting for one minute that the only thing that's going to improve this world is if the people who feel that the United States is not doing their thing correctly, that we should out and out declare a war?
But how is you as a responsible leader, as a student government, how can you sit there and say that violence is a is an avenue of approach to change? You see, violence begets violence, and if you have violence, you're going to polarize the student body, you're going to have more hard hats coming on campus, and you're going to have people being killed, you're going to have more Kent people being killed. That doesn't achieve very much either, does it?
I'm not saying that violence is good, but
Mr. Reed,
I, as a person who's been using nonviolence within a limited system for 3 years, I think it's okay. It might be the right way. It might verbally sound nice to certain people, mm-hmm. but in all honesty, I can't say that it totally works. I would also have to agree with the statement that to a degree, violence can accomplish change, and that just by observing things within the high school community for the 3 years that I've been in this country, in the high schools, I say that violence does bring about a response. It could bring about a positive response, but in the long run, the administrators have to give in and make certain concessions along the way.
It's curious. I once asked one of the girls on campus taking part in demonstrations. I said, has the revolution come? And she says, yes, the revolution has come. And I says, well, are you prepared to go out and buy a pistol or a rifle or something? And she says, no. She says, why? I says, I'm going to put daisies inside the National Guard rifles. A lot of these students really don't know what revolution really is. And if a revolution does come, I'm afraid of the repressive forces in this country. For instance, that a lot of these students, are they willing to go into the streets with rifles? And you say violence.
Again, we're trying to say is that why do people have to use violence? That's the point we're missing. The point is that people
are
frustrated.
You're not condoning
it or whatever, but you're just looking at what is obvious. You can't just continue writing and sending letters and talking to people without seeing any actions. There is a time when you get frustrated with these channels because you're not getting any response. You see that you're not getting any response.
What is the frustration? Is it frustration at, and this I think becomes completely confused on the campus, is it frustration with those above? That's how it often is expressed in sort of our most, you know, very rhetorical moments. We're frustrated with the establishment, the refusal, blah, 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 blah. But actually, and I think some of the statements that Lita and you made indicate that it's also frustration with our fellow students, that we have not gotten the majority of them on our side. And I am a convinced Democrat. I mean, first of all, small d, any of the things that we said today could be, we could all be a bunch of young Nazis. We want to bring about the elimination of the Jews and so forth. Should we do it by violent or peaceful means? As we're assuming that we all have the same goals, our goals are decent. What about people who disagree with our goals?
One has to understand what violence is. Now, if you're talking about violence on the campus, anything that doesn't hurt physically anybody, to me, is acceptable. It is, yes, it is called violence. They called it very much violence of shutting the elevators or going into the cafeteria or taking the books off the bookshelves and throwing them on the floor because it was a symbol that this bookstore is robbing the students. That was called violence.
It's a little more serious than
that. Now, all I can say is, If I personally, and I can only speak for myself, feel it is necessary to take arms, then I must decide and commit myself to the whole cause and commit myself to facing the fact I may be the next one that is killed either by a National Guard or by somebody who feels that what I'm doing is wrong.
Would you tell the students of Hunter College to do that?
No, I would never tell anyone to do that.
At that point, I'm afraid I have to call a halt. Our time is up. I thank all of you for being with us today, Mr. Reeves, Mr. Schwant, Mr. Kelman, Mr. Wongo, Ms. Marks. Well, we hope the program has shed some light and done some good. Thank you.